Ready to get started? We call this meeting of the Senate Rules Committee to order. We have present here in Fairbanks, myself, the Vice Chairman, Senator Lehman, we have Senator Taylor, Senator Duncan, Senator Torgerson, and online in Anchorage is the Chairman, Senator Kelly. Can you hear us okay, Tim?
I'm on board.
Okay. Well, you just jerk our chain if we get out of hand up here. We have a room full of people. Actually, we have several people here in the Fairbanks Legislative Information Office who have asked to have time to testify. And we're going to try to accommodate some time constraints that we are aware of. And if there's anybody else who is planning to testify who has time constraints, let us know and we'll do our best to accommodate you. And I just want to note that we have some materials in the back of the room. Tim Benatendi says to deal with this topic. If anybody wants those, you can get those. And then we have the microphone set up here at this table for those of us in Fairbanks for testifying. And if you're going to testify from somewhere else, just make sure to get near the microphone so we can pick you up. We have recording equipment here in Fairbanks to deal with that. First to testify is Representative Terry Martin. If Terry, if you'd join us and present your testimony, please proceed.
Yes, good morning, Senator, and thank you all very much for this old request. I got to get to school. I'm trying to learn something so I can get an honest job when I resign next year. So thank you for your accommodation. Also, I want to place my bet this evening. You'll be at the Permanent Fund hearing, and I'm going to say it's going to be 1382. Chairman and committee members, this request that's in the Senate bill was similar to one that was put in the House bill at the request of the Budget and Audit Committee. Over the years that I've been chairman and Senator Phillips has been chairman, and even before that, about 8 years, we have had numerous requests for audits on the railroad. A lot of it had to do with the land and how the railroad was using the land. And then also the indebtedness. It was debt-free when we got it, and we paid a lot of cash to get it so that we can transfer it into a private enterprise eventually and let it really excel and be a real railroad. But in the meantime, the forces to be did not entertain any idea of selling the railroad. The structure of the railroad board and the chairman insisted that they transfer to the legislature to sell it in 1988. Every time the legislature tried anything to look into any request for proposals, it's usually members of the railroad board and the people who have the land who quietly insist we don't touch them, that it's going to be devastating, that the world's going to fall apart and everything else. Well, eventually we did research and found out that it was warned by the Attorney General under former Governor Bill Sheffield that we perhaps went too far in delegating our authority to the Railroad Corporation, that these lands, these materials, and the future transfer of land, which is over 42,000 acres of land, belong to the state, and that state legislature needs to do something. It was suggested by the Budget Audit Committee, our experts, that we need to put them under the executive branch until we see what will happen in the long run. Now, Governor Sheffield has been great in the last 2 years of bringing up every fear you could ever imagine that this is going to be so devastating. But you know, ladies and gentlemen, we oversee one of the biggest corporations in the world. That is the Permanent Fund Corporation with almost $23 billion. We oversee the fiduciary report from the teacher's pension plan, from the permanent, from the state employees. We oversee ADA. We oversee the Alaska Electrical Corporation. So there's about five different corporations that we oversee, and the front of the budget always shows what the legislature approves for expenditures and capital improvement. So it hasn't been devastating, and I don't think we should go on fear to say that we're going to not do what is constitutionally our responsibility and legislative what is our responsibility. And I think we ought to give credit to our experts, especially those in the audit division, who realized this problem, and also to the former Attorney General, Mr. Gorsuch, that said, hey, you cannot constitutionally delegate this much authority. It is, to me, a real problem when we do not know, and perhaps on behalf of the citizen, what is happening to our land. What secret deals are being made? Are we getting fair value out of our land? We have given reports showing that Anchorage Port does a much better job in raising money for the land adjacent that the city owns compared to what the railroad is getting. These things need to be bought out public. We hear all kinds of deals going on right now with Taiwan, getting the land that Lepanto has now. I don't know if it's true or not. I've heard deals where one person who was a lobbyist in the past had got 35 acres of that he's got a long-term lease on for what? Well, he's going to lease it to BP for what? Well, the railroad's letting him to be the facilitator. These kind of things need to be brought up. Good in that motion to us and the people. That's the reason the simple bill says, let's bring it under the Executive Budget Act, which is our constitutional responsibility. And I don't know how strong to emphasize that, but that's my testimony, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Martin. Senator Taylor.
Yeah, Representative Martin, have you had any legal research done on the question of previous transactions by the railroad and if, in fact, those transactions are voidable or void?
No, sir, we haven't even touched that. I imagine that eventually our audit specialist, Mr. Wilker, might give us some of that. But as long as the railroad corporation and their specialties and their say it's proprietary information, you don't have it private, it's private. See, they want to be private whenever it's beneficial to them, and they want to be public whenever it's beneficial to them, like taxes and not paying the authority and not having open meetings and stuff like that. So we really don't know what's happening to our land, who got the 35-year deals, who got the 55-year deals, and other what scenario has it been beneficial for the public and its citizens. It's all been quiet.
You've not had any research done, and you know of no litigation pending, apparently, huh?
Well, there's a lot of litigation, sir, and I think we've pinpointed some of that. I know there's litigation on the gravel in Anchorage that I think the community council from Government Hill brought forth. There's litigation going on from the municipality of Anchorage pertaining to, I think it was about 8 lawsuits so far, compared hazardous waste and hazardous materials, and that's when the railroad said, hey, we're public, we don't have to obey the law like a private citizen does. And there's some other litigation, or it was, up in Fairbanks, and I think in the past, most of the requests for what's happening to the land came from Fairbanks. This guy got a deal, that guy got a deal, and the audit committee, as they would tell you, said that they cannot do this. They have to give open above board request for proposals, not take the first offer secretly and then put it on their file of proprietary information.
Now, the reason I'm asking is I'm concerned that if, in fact, some of those agreements, apparently the agreement seems to hold unless someone challenges it or the legislature acts, and the legislature is failing to act to supervise or appropriate funds or whatever it's necessary for us to do. It becomes a fact accompli. They have in fact accomplished what they wanted, even without necessarily the appropriate authority, if appropriate authority is wanting. And I guess my concern is anyone dealing with the railroad in one of these transactions, it could be a fine transaction, everybody dealing in good faith, only to find out that because it violated the constitutional concerns that you have raised, that the contract is voidable. I think we need to know whether that, in fact, whether there is any substance to Mr. Gorsuch's opinion or other opinions that have been rendered. If there is, then that may very well jeopardize current operations. And if that's the case, I think we need to take a hard look at that.
Well, that's the reason, so for the bill, this is a simple solution to put them under the budget, Executive Budget Act, so we can see what's going on. If the legislature feel, hey, I'm not a legal expert, you know that. I can only go by having faith in the legal experts, our audit committee, Mr. Gorsuch in the past, the legal staff that we have now, all say you've got to bring this thing under the Executive Budget Act. So I have faith in them. I think we should do that. The railroad people, those who have leases, the union, they're going to come down and give us all the fear that they could ever think that we're at. And as it was said in one meeting, those legislators are just trying to get it because they want the money and they're going to destroy it. So they will say every negative, and they have said every negative thing they can do towards the legislator because we are the Mongols that want to grab this thing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions of Representative Martin? Thank you, Terry, for being with us today, and best wishes over at UAA.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your compliment.
Okay. Next, Jeff Cook.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Cook, COOK. I reside at 458 Terrace Drive in Fairbanks. I'm Vice President of External Affairs and Administration for MAPCO Alaska Petroleum, based here at North Pole, Alaska, some 13 miles southeast of us where we sit right now. MAPCO has the distinction of being the largest customer of the Alaska Railroad. We account for about 32% of the freight volume, and if I remember right, we paid about $23 million in freight revenues during 1996 to the railroad. We are now in the midst of a major expansion of our refinery, and we will increase our shipping volumes by fourth quarter of 1998 by 50%. A tremendous number of cars. We'll probably have two trains a day with 40 to 50 cars being shipped to Anchorage, providing jet fuel to the Anchorage airport and providing gasoline, diesel fuels, and other fuels to fuel the Anchorage and South Central, Southeast Alaska economies. In addition, we happen to be one of the larger tenants of the railroad in leasing from them at the Port of Anchorage. And I would like to tell you that in the last few years, our relationship with the railroad has improved immensely. We feel things are working along very well right now, and I would caution against passage of Senate Bill 42. Right now, with the expansion we're going through, the railroad met last week and made a determination that they need to acquire additional locomotives. I believe they ordered 8 new locomotives with an option on an additional 8. We're going to have to do some reconfigurations in the Anchorage port in the railroad area to accommodate the additional shipping. We're working on those things with the railroad, which may involve expenditures of capital on both parties. It is my concern that, first of all, things are going along well now. We, as the largest shipper, are pleased with the business relationship we have. And let me tell you, in a tight margin business, every penny that it costs us to do business, whether it's shipping or handling of fuel, is critical. We feel we're getting excellent value from the railroad. We also feel they're an excellent landlord. We are in a dispute with them now because we think they're charging us too much for our lease at the Port of Anchorage, and we're going through a process to work that out. But I can tell you, as somebody with a commercial real estate background and holding a CCIM commercial designation with a lot of experience in commercial real estate, they are tough negotiators. They are doing a good job. They are getting value for their leases down there. So I really feel that in order for them to be flexible to meet the uncertain changes that come along because of customers like MAPCO who may do additional expansions and things come along, that we can't necessarily wait for the normal legislative process. I feel that the legislature and the state has every right to know what's going on with the railroad. There should be periodic reports. You should have access to financial reports and audits, but I think those can be done and they can remain a flexible business enterprise responsive to their customers and to the needs of the state as they're operating now. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony. We're pleased to have an alliance with the railroad. We value our relationship with them. We just don't think it could any better, and we think the flexibilities that are there now offer us the best opportunity to move forward and add value to the economy of Alaska.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm just going to ask a question. In a public hearing last week on the regarding jet fuel and bringing that line from a new line from the port down to the airport, one of the members of the public asked a question about essentially, well, why, if you're bringing, what did you say, about 100 cars? It will be at least capacity about 100 cars a day. Why can't you, instead of dropping those off at the port, bring those on out to the spur at the airport, and there was a response given in that at that meeting about, you know, no connection to the fuel tank farm, and also the dangers of bringing cars, those cars, into that area. Is that something you've looked at as an alternative to improvements at the port and the new line there?
It's not our center. It's not our ability to influence that greatly. We need to go where we can leave our fuel and have it get into the system. The consortium that Signature operates down there really has control over all that. And right now, our ability to drop fuel and get it into the system, which is very critical to us, has us bringing it to the port. Certainly, if there are other options, and we're very concerned about that pipeline, that connection, because we're up against some problems now. But yes, that's not something we can say to the railroad, hey, let's start dropping over there, because you got to get it into the pipeline system, in the tankage and distribution system. So we're willing to work with those parties who have that responsibility to do what we can to do it in the best way possible.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Taylor.
Yeah. What was your relationship with the railroad, say, 5-7 years ago?
We had a tougher relationship, a relationship to the point that MAPCO looked at building a pipeline and did some initial permitting. As we went through that process, the railroad became responsive to our concerns and needs. We did drop the plans for that pipeline, and we did sign a long-term contract. I believe that was a 15-year contract with a 5-year renewal, and we must be 3 or 4 years into that. I know the president of the railroad, Governor Sheffield, may be aware of that, but I think it seems to me we got about 4 years left on that. So the relationship was one that had some problems, and it's one that's come a long way, and we feel that's good. And we're able to be responsive to our needs in a short time, and the railroad does give us flexibility that we wouldn't have with a pipeline, so we're pleased that relationship changed.
Well, I guess my concern is for stability within your industry and others that would rely upon it. To what extent do you believe the current good working relationship is based on current personnel as opposed to previous? And could that change?
Senator, those things can certainly always change. I think, though, that some relationships and understandings that were developed, the long-term contract we have requires both parties to adhere to certain operational principles, and I think that that certainly we have set up the mechanism with our contract to ensure that no matter who's there, we're going to have the kind of relationship that we require, or we're going to be able to exit that contract. I would have the same concerns about relationships and reactions, I guess, no matter who was there. And my concern is you add another layer to that responsiveness and slow down the time things. And when we're talking about the kind of expansion and changes we're going through, you don't have time to, a lot of time you don't have a long lead time to be able to make those changes.
I guess my concern is that through my experiences, I have encountered various purchasing agents at times and known some of them fairly well for major corporations. I don't think I ever knew one that didn't make more under the table than he did in his salary. And that part of the concern, I think, in government that we have is that we set up all sorts of very difficult structures to make certain that sort of activity is not taking place. And knowing full well that in the real world, there are always concessions granted and agreements made, and sometimes those will depend upon commission paid and where that commission ends up and so on. That's part of doing business in the process, not necessarily under the table, but at least it's part of doing business that those concessions be granted and those agreements be made and so on. It's from that concern, I think, that legislation like this is spawned, and concerns that unless we all know and everything's up on top of the table, we're not going to feel comfortable with it. And I guess that's my concern also. The allegations made by Representative Martin are very serious, and I would hope that there's no basis to any of that. But if in fact there is, then further public scrutiny might be necessary. And as we move through this process, I guess I just wanted you to know that's where I'll be coming from. I'm concerned about that, to make certain it's as clean as we can keep it and yet still operate a business. And I don't know if you have concerns about that yourself within your company or within others. And I don't know to what extent those concerns may have any basis in reality. I know in the real world that there are major corporations set up auditing procedures and other devices so that they can make certain that that's not occurring to them. As an owner of this facility, it seems to me that we own it but have very little oversight as to the specific day-to-day management of it. And I would like to have you respond to that if you could, because I think it is a concern. I think it's the basis for the litigation or the legislation that's before us.
Through the chair, Senator, I guess I'm highly concerned about the words you used at the beginning of your comment, and I would like to say unequivocally that MAPCO and the companies that we deal with, whether it's the railroad or trucking companies, abide by the highest ethical principles. I'm offended that there would be any even concern that anything other than fair and ethical business practices take place. We do have external auditors. They audit us very carefully. The railroad has auditors. Business is very competitive out there, but business ethics, I think, are really at an all-time high in this country. We deal, as a company who spends $400 some million a year, we deal with all kinds of enterprises. We have a code of conduct with our company, and we have one that I think is very similar to many companies that operate, and we have a value, vision, and principle statement, and we have a code of ethics in our company, and I assure you it's abided by. We do not tolerate anything that's not above the table. We do not tolerate unethical business practices. We have never encountered that with the railroad, not even the sense of it. We haven't encountered it with any of the other companies that deal with the railroad. We haven't encountered it in our leasing. We haven't encountered it with any of the trucking companies we do business with. We do a lot of business, and I guess, Senator, I was concerned and offended by the words, and I assure you, ethics and moral practices are high on our agenda, and I'm proud to say we have a very, very excellent relationship in that manner with the railroad. Likewise, the railroad's in a competitive business. All of us tend to have other interests, even many of you besides the legislature. Many of those businesses require information to be proprietary, to be competitive, to be fair. And in fact, there's antitrust regulations against sharing certain amounts of information. And I want to assure you that we abide by every law, we go beyond every law, and we have our own personal code of ethics, and that is not a concern to me at all.
Well, I hope we can make that concern abundantly clear and to all of the people concerned about the legislation. But for that concern, I don't think the legislation would be before you.
Yeah, Jeff, I want to reiterate a little bit of what Senator Taylor said on the some of the reasons behind this. You know, I believe that there are things that the railroad has done in the past, and I think there have been some improvements made. But I represent the port area you've been talking about, and right above that port area is Government Hill, which is which is in my district. And I've been to a number of the community council meetings and other neighborhood meetings that in which, you know, members have expressed some concerns about the relationship with the railroad. It's next door neighbor, and of course you can have some of those. And there have been some concerns about the arrangement with the Flamingo Brothers and the gravel extraction, which I know is not part of your dealing, but these all together help create an environment for why something like this comes into play. And then, you know, you yourself, your testimony said that, you know, there have been some changes and the relationship with the railroad is better. So sometimes things like this help cause behavior to change for the better, and to that end, I think that's, you know, the fact that we're even holding hearings and looking at it probably helps the railroad improve.
I appreciate that. I just hope you understand some of the words that were used, I think, required a strong response on my part, and one that we're very proud of.
I appreciate your company's policy and you yourself personally making sure that, you know, MAPCO does abide by that policy of the highest ethical standards, and I encourage you to do so. Further questions of Mr. Cook?
No, just a comment. Jeff, I understand that. I placed it in that fashion on purpose because I think it's the essence of the legislation that's before you. But we all have high ethical standards. But it's like trust in God, but keep your powder dry. Every one of us also has significant objective audits that we perform on ourselves and we perform on our businesses. And we do that for very good reasons. That's to make certain that those high ethical standards are being maintained. I've got an audit right here in front of me that doesn't show a lot of careful examination being given. It probably was, but maybe in the heat of business, and somebody had to make a decision. Maybe those decisions were made for fine reasons, and I don't doubt that they were. It's just that it appears as though they weren't being followed. And when that happens on a public asset, I've got to ask a tough question or two. So please don't take any offense at it personally.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Is there anybody who has signed up who has a time constraint that I'm not aware of?
Well, Senator Lehman, this is Senator Kelly. Was the plan to have the legislative auditor testify today? Is he online?
Yes, Randy Welker.
Mr. Welker is online. Yes, the plan is to have him testify. If there's no time constraint, would it be your preference that he go ahead now?
Yeah, I think I'd like to hear what he has to say. Frank, this is Representative Cowdery. I would like to ask Mr. Cook if now or at a later time some questions on his testimony. I'm in Anchorage.
Okay, John, probably unbeknownst to you, Jeff had to leave for a medical appointment, and that was why we moved him up in the schedule, and he has just stepped out of the room. So perhaps you could call him at his office later today and talk with him about the testimony.
I'd like to.
Or you can pass on your questions to us, and we'll see.
Well, it seems to me, I would like him to be specific how this Budget Act oversight would harm business. I think all of the businesses that are that we do oversight, from city government to DOT. I think it's if a project's a good project, I'm sure that that project would get the approval of the legislature in their oversight. I don't think that they talk short-term decisions. I don't think that the decisions that Masco made to expand their factory or their business in Fairbanks and was made in a week. One week thing. I think it was a long-term decision. I think it's a good decision. I think it took several, maybe even year or more to do that. And I think that we should expect. For instance, I don't think that the railroad making the decision to expand that he talked about to expand the railroad in larger cars. That probably didn't happen in one day or one week or one month. I'm sure that decision came about. I've heard talk of that the locomotives have to be larger and all of this for several years. So anyway, it just that was some of the questions that I would like to also like to know how, as I said earlier, how long it takes MAPCO to make formalize a decision to do whatever they do. I think that the oversight is a good thing for the people of Alaska. I don't think it'll harm business or anybody that does business with it. So that's basically the tone and the questions that I want to ask about. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. We'll see that those questions get passed on to Mr. Cook.
Thank you.
Mr. Welker, are you ready to testify?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Randy Welker. Good morning to everyone. I guess I have a lot of comments on record on this bill and the similar bills on the House side, Mr. Chairman, so I will be relatively brief and then I'd be happy to answer any questions. The bill that is before you, I think, should be looked at sort of in two pieces. One is the bill itself that brings the railroad under the Budget Act, and the other part of it is the appropriations itself to accomplish the constitutional requirement that Representative Martin spoke of. The bill, in my mind, the bill is intended to to accomplish one very simple thing. That is to bring the railroad under the legislature's well-established process of oversight and review of state government. The railroad is the only entity of state government that does not participate in that oversight process. All I envisioned in making the recommendation that this be accomplished was we have, the only contact we've had with the railroad in recent past has been the, primarily has been the audit process. The audit process is after the fact. Usually something has already happened. Some constituent or some legislator has already been disenfranchised or is concerned about something, and we're called in after the fact. The budget process, an annual oversight process, puts the railroad in front of the legislature and provides a forum for discussing not only past concerns but future concerns. And that's all we're looking for in trying to bring the railroad before the legislature. There's been testimony that can happen other ways. It doesn't have to be through the budget process. That's true, but I would comment that the budget process has proven to be a good oversight function and process the legislature has had in place for a long, long time. Now, the railroad has testified, and many of the people that get behind the railroad on this bill and on this issue have said that it will impair their ability to do business. I respectfully disagree with that. I think if you look at this language, to bring them under the Budget Act, and then you look at the language that I envision goes hand in hand with this process, the language that was in the front section of the budget this last session that was unfortunately vetoed by the governor, that language, I don't have it in front of me, but it in effect said simply that the amount necessary to operate the railroad is appropriated to the railroad. There are no limitations in that language. This process isn't envisioned to be one where the legislature tells them how much they can spend on travel or how much they can spend on new railroad cars. It's a process just to have an open discussion, and the end result of that discussion is general appropriation language in the front of the appropriation bill that says what you need to operate is appropriated to you. Therefore, I don't see where there is a concern. It doesn't matter if they do have short-term decisions they have to make. That kind of appropriation language allows them to operate the same way they always have. It removes the constitutional question. I'm not going to get into the arguments on that. It's going to take the legal experts to sort out whether that, in fact, is a requirement. I will offer that with very few exceptions, that there isn't any operating function of state government that isn't appropriated by the legislature. So this isn't intended, and if I thought it would end up somehow limiting the railroad, I would never have suggested in the first place. I think it's a mechanism to provide a forum before the legislature, before the owners of the state. We have had a lot of problems in the past. Mr. Sheffield has done a good job as president of the board, and I hope will continue as CEO in recognizing the public aspect of the railroad, the public ownership aspect that I think was missing in the past. But this forum through the Budget Act is a way of institutionalizing that forum before the legislature. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kelly.
I've got a question to Randy Welker. We add the railroad's appropriation to the Executive Budget Act. How will that affect the majority's efforts to hold down state spending totals? You know, if we add the railroad's operating and capital expenditures to our budget appropriation, how much money are we talking about in fiscal year 2000, for example, which would be the first year, as I understand the bill, this would come into effect if it's passed next session?
Mr. Welker?
Mr. Chairman, I guess it depends on what you consider the state's budget. In reality, I would consider the operations of the railroad as part of state expenditure right now. So I don't know that you're really increasing anything. You're increasing the process and the appropriation you have to make, but you're not really increasing state spending because the railroad already is considered state spending.
Well, a good deal of the fiscal gap, of course, is perceptual as opposed to reality. How much money are we talking about here? What is the operating budget of the railroad, and what is basically their capital expenditures? How much would it be adding to the spending bottom line if we add it to the Executive Budget Act? Do we have those numbers?
Mr. Chairman, I do not have it. I'm sure someone from the railroad could give you a better number than I could.
Mr. Chairman, could you get a thumbnail figure from someone there about how much they spend a year operating and how much capital?
We'll get that answer from Governor Sheffield when he provides his testimony. Do you have that? Yes. Okay, Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Randy, I wanted to go back to your statement about what this language really does as far as the corporation is concerned. You said, for example, in this last year's budget bill, language vetoed by the governor, there was a very general statement that whatever the railroad needed to operate would be appropriated. That was the language this time. However, by bringing it under the Executive Budget Act, the legislature can go a lot further. Isn't that correct? I mean, we actually could treat them just like we do any other agency, looking at their level of travel, their level of supplies, their equipment purchases, et cetera. There's no assurances that general language will continue. In fact, knowing the legislative body, we'll probably move right into micromanaging. Am I correct in assuming that we can go much further?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duncan, I won't disagree with you that capability is there. It has always been there. I would point out, you know, that we have AHFC in front section language that leaves some very wide open appropriations. We have, over the years, tightened down a little bit on giving them some very large upper limit dollars. But yes, you're correct. That capability is always there. It's not anything that I envision in supporting this bill or supporting this process.
And I understand that, but I just wanted to make it clear for those who may be listening that although that's not envisioned, wasn't envisioned in this year's budget language, the next legislature could change that dramatically and have substantial impact upon what's appropriate for operating and what's appropriate for capital expenses. And I think it could slow down, be my concern. I think I want to hear Governor Sheffield speak to this, but be my concern that all of a sudden you slow down the decision making that may be very important for the railroad, because we all understand how the legislative process works.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Duncan, I don't disagree with you. And I think maybe this takes us back to Senator Taylor's question of does the legislature truly have that constitutional responsibility to appropriate?
Further questions of Mr. Welker? Thank you, Randy. Are you going to be able to stand by and be available if we have further questions?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks for your testimony. Next, Bill Sheffield, Governor Sheffield. You come to your testimony.
Actually, can I ask Randy one other question?
Okay.
Randy, this is Jim Duncan again. Let me ask you just one other question. You said you would not support this. You envisioned this as being very general language, otherwise you would not support this bill. So are you concerned that the legislature might get to the point where they become, where they get into micromanaging the railroad? Is that a concern of yours? And because I thought I heard you say you based your recommendation solely on the fact that it would be very general appropriation language.
Senator Duncan, I don't have that concern. When I brought this suggestion and recommendation before, for the first time, was before the Senate Finance Committee in the oversight hearings. All along, I envisioned this bill and the effects of this bill going hand in hand with that general type of language in the front section. I didn't come forward, and I wouldn't have come forward with a recommendation that this bill and a very tight appropriation or appropriating process go hand in hand with this bill. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
I think you did. I think, well, maybe at least the way I understood it is, you envision this as being a very general oversight by the legislature and not one where it's an appropriation process that we might do as we approach other agencies, or as we handle it with other agencies, not quite that specific in detail. So might, is that what you're saying?
Correct, Mr. Chairman. My concern is not so much with the act of appropriating. My concern is bringing the railroad before the legislature in the forum that we use for all other entities for an open and frank and healthy dialogue, and that's through the Budget Act process.
And I'm sorry to keep Governor Sheffield waiting, but I think you also said there were other ways of doing this outside the Executive Budget Act. Did you say that in your testimony, or was it someone else that said that?
I've said that, Mr. Chairman, Senator Duncan, because that's been stated before. The railroad has said that they'd be more than willing to come down and make presentations anytime. There are other forums. I just think it's healthy to do it in the vein of the finances of the state and in the same vein that every other entity of state government is before the legislature.
Thank you for responding to those additional questions. Governor Sheffield.
Well, thank you very much, Senator. I really didn't come with any prepared remarks. I think probably I need to say a few things about the railroad harbor and its operation today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have. First of all, I need to say that I was in business for a long time in the state. And my motto always was, and I learned early on, if you can't run a business legally or with high morals or high ethics, then you shouldn't be in the business. I can assure you that the Alaska Railroad has high business morals, high ethics in its operation. It's professionally run with good business people. And we have internal auditors, we have external auditors, we have performance audits on the railroad itself. Our books are open, and we don't run it like a bar used to be, maybe in a small town, where you put a rotten gut whiskey into a VO bottle and try to sell it. We have internal controls, we have top people, we have good people, and I want you to know that as far as we know, and our controls indicated that we don't operate or have a problem operating with ourselves or other companies. And I realize Senator Taylor wasn't aiming it at us, but I just want you to know that we operate under the curriculum of laws of the state of Alaska. And so we don't have a problem, and nor do we want one, and we're not going to buy into one either. Just this year, the railroad's running fine, running out of profit. We're on budget. We're a little bit above budget as far as our profit is concerned. We came through a good passengers season. Still have passenger service operating now today, of course, but we are in a heavy time of the summer. Freight service was strong. Our freight business was strong. Our barge service from Whittier and into Whittier from Prince Rupert, Seattle has been strong. It's been full all year long. We're just in the process of finalizing our negotiations with Crowley to continue to be the operator of the barge service. We had a very successful negotiations since I've been on the board, and up until today we've had a turnaround in that operation. You know, there's a lot of times decisions are made for all the right reasons and don't turn out to be right. But this was one that was made a long time ago that cost us some money. But we've had a major turnaround from a $3 million deficit to a $2 million profit. So we feel pretty good about that. So the railroad's doing what it was supposed to do to begin with in 1923, serving Alaskans from tidewater to the interior of Alaska. And it's operating as it was organized and set to operate by the legislature in 1984-85 and by that administration. And to try and make a profit, not be a burden to the state of Alaska. So it's operating like it was supposed to. We didn't know if it would when we did it back in 84, 85, but it did. It worked, and it's not a liability to the state, and we're very, very proud about that. We gross and spend, Senator Lehman, between $75 and $80 million. In the year 1999, that gross would go up to about $100 million or a little higher. And so that gives you the operating and the capital budget, because all the money that we make goes back into the rail line, goes back into the line, goes back into the track, valves, ties, equipment, and so on and so forth. So this year, it was already mentioned, we've ordered 8 new locomotives. We'll take delivery of those locomotives in the end of 1998, first quarter of 99. On how they come off this thing, they're in line with 4,000 horsepower AC locomotive division. BMD's locomotives. When we get 8 more in the winter of 2000-2001, and when we get those 16 new locomotives, we will have been able to get rid of 35 of them. Some will sell, some we will lease out. Whichever is the best for the Alaska River at that time. That decision hasn't been made yet. If we had 6 locomotives on a coal train, we'll only have 3. If we had 5 locomotives on a Matco train, we'll only have 2. We had 2 locomotives that we leased this summer running around the clock on our gravel trains. Some of you may have seen them down there. They're red and silver colored. Gravel was coming all the time, and we're still running them even today. Our real estate division, we have a new vice president in charge of real estate, Dave Eagle, doing a lot of planning. Instead of sitting by the phone waiting for somebody to lease some property, we're going out marketing our property, planning with the communities what that property ought to be used for, the highest and best use. We have a new chief financial officer. We hired from the municipality of Anchorage recently. The one we had been with the railroad 10 years and moved outside. The Mercer Group has just completed their performance audit on the railroad as required by state law. And each year we single out one area, whether it be mechanical or engineering, passenger service, real estate, whatever it might be, that we single out for them to primarily be concerned with, but the audit the entire railroad. I think in the past the railroad has caused some of their own problems. We didn't bar the door when the auditors came to audit, but we didn't make it too comfortable for them. We don't do that anymore. We cooperate in every way. We don't bar the door. We don't take arrogant pills for breakfast. We realize that we're owned by the state of Alaska. It's not our railroad, it's not our creek, it's not our land. It belongs to the state of Alaska. We have 600,000 shareholders out there. Well, we're charged with the responsibility of doing things for the railroad to make it profitable, and all that goes into running a railroad, we also try and take a look out there and see how those decisions look to the people. We don't have any more Flamingo Brother gravel pits. We operate a little different. Our attitude's 100% changed if it needed to be changed. We operate the railroad for the benefit of the customers, not the employees, and for the benefit of Alaskans. And we take pride as being the custodians of that fine operation. Some of our biggest customers were here. Jeff Cook, representing MAPCO, they are our largest customer. The next largest customer is Joe Isabelli, and John Sims is here. But we have a lot of customers. we have customers all over the state of Alaska, little ones, big ones, Fort Knox, trucking companies up here that haul stuff that we haul up to Fairbanks and goes on to Prudhoe Bay. We're a moving company. We are truly in the private sector, dealing with true private sector people. We're a government operation, but working with the private sector continually. And I want to explain this because, and you know, Jeff Cook were here, he'd answer some of the questions that Representative Cowdery wants to ask him. And I don't blame him because it's hard to explain why one government operation shouldn't be under the Executive Budget Act. You can't do it in a 5-minute TV spot, or you can't do it in a 1-minute conversation with somebody. But, well, MAPCO might plan for 10 years or 5 years on a new refinery. Chances are, and it happens all the time, they don't know when they're going to have a breakdown, or they don't know when they're going to have a change in their market in the lower 48, and they want to ship jet fuel someplace else, or other types of products to Whittier and Seward, which they don't do on a normal basis. Or they need to have 4 more trains this week because of extra products, or 6 trains last week. We have to roll with them. Usavelli changes their coal production, not their production, but the markets change in Korea, and the markets change at the universities or in the military. We have to be able to roll with them and add extra train sets, extra cars, to move that fuel when they need to have it fueled, when they have to have it moved. We got to reach out, bring back people, hire more people. We have to let people go. We have to go out and rent cars in the lower 48. We may have to borrow money. We can't obligate one legislature to the next if we're in the Executive Budget Act. And so how's a bank going to loan us any money? How are they going to trust us to pay them? How are they going to trust the government to appropriate the money so we can pay it back on a regular basis? How are we going to contract with Crowley for 5 or 6 years for BART service to get the best contract we can, get the best price, and lower $10,000 a week like we just did, if we can't be sure we're going to, if they can't be sure that we're sure that we're going to have the money to pay them every week, every month, every year for that contract? How can we make a 20-year contract with MAPCO? How can they be sure of their long-range plans, how they're going to build a refinery and pay us another $13 million in the year 1999 for the delivery of that fuel if they don't know that we're going to honor those contracts? Usavelli the same way. It's not that we are upset about this. It's hard to explain to the people in Alaska. I've been out there doing it, so they understand. It's hard to explain to every legislator what that means to a business. I tell you, if we run the Executive Budget Act, and everybody says they're different, you know, in the state of Alaska, the state of Alaska is different than any other state, probably in a lot of ways we are. But we have to roll with the customer's needs, whether it be BP, ARCO, trucking firms. We had a contract with BP now for 5 years for hauling pipe. It's increased 33%. We've got to reach out there and arrange all these contracts for trucking companies and all that, because it's a through deal all the way from wherever it comes from to Prudhoe Bay. And so we're government owned, and we're working truly with the private sector. And so we have to be flexible to run the business. We would love to have a chance to have a forum with the Senate and the House every year, any time, to explain our business. We did it last year for the first time in a long time. We appeared before the Senate and House Finance and the Transportation Committee, so I think one of them was there. We need more of those opportunities. We try to run this railroad profitably. We try to run it to provide the service to Alaskans. We're not a drag on the state of Alaska. Most people think our people are state employees. They're not. They don't come under the State Retirement Act. They'd like to be, of course. because they would be a lot better off in their health benefits probably in their retirement packages, but their railroad employees are also federal government and have dropped out of that service yet. So I think the railroad's doing what it set out to do. If you put us under the Executive Budget Act and you only want to have a little view and lump some of the money to us, you know, I was there. You can't commit one legislature to the next or one person's thoughts from one day to the next. It has to be set out in law. We're not like AHSC. We're not like AIDA. We have different needs. We have different responsibilities to the people of the state. We're trying to do our best to run this business profitably and safe and have a good workforce and deliver what the state of Alaska wants us to deliver for the people of the state. And so if you give away half our land, like the other half of the bill says, the other bill you have floating around the legislature, that's half our income. It'll be a little less than half our income in the future, probably, but that makes us go broke. Our income is fragile. If you want more control, with control comes more liabilities for the state of Alaska. You have no liabilities now. It's been set up that way. So you have to think about those things. Give us a chance to appear before you more. Give us a chance to answer your questions. Give us a chance to come to your communities, come to your sessions. Give us a chance to explain what we do. Ask us anything you want to ask us. And we'll tell you. And I know that we've caused some problems in the past years. I can tell you those problems are not there anymore, and they're not going to be there. And even if I'm gone one day that'll happen, that won't happen again because you change the philosophy of the company and the company doesn't do that anymore. That continues on for a long, long time. The governor wants it to be run the way it's run now. He doesn't want, we're not out there to block anybody from knowing anything. And that's the way he wants it. That's the way we want it. You've got a lot of good board members. You've got a lot of good people working at the Alaska Railroad. So, talk too long. I just will tell you that we don't have the kind of lawsuits that Representative Martin talked about. A lot of innuendos. I don't know what he's talking about, but we don't display our lawsuits in front of the public. But the auditor who comes to our offices is a professional auditor hired by the state of Alaska. We show them everything they want to see. Some things are confidential and they can't take it with them and they can't lay out themselves and tell everybody in the world what it is, but they know. And sometimes I think they're auditing from government perspectives, like when we sell equipment. Senator Taylor, if we sell some equipment that's old and obsolete, we have a chance that somebody needs it in the state of Washington because they're on a fast job right now and we got $600,000 for it. Who's to know if we'd have went out for bid in the state of Alaska, there's not another railroad. This is railroad equipment. This is stuff that rides on the rail. And who's to know if that would have ever worked if we'd have missed a season and they'd been able to sell it. So that's one of the audits you're looking at. And, you know, I don't know. I just think that we were right. It was a business decision. We leased other equipment for this year's tie work that never failed on us. It's a lot better, and we even set a record this year for laying 85,000 ties, 2,400 ties in one day. Those machines are just moving like this right down that track. So we're really proud of what we did, and we should be, and we need to be getting back on working. Anyway, that's it. Thank you for being able to answer any questions.
Thank you, Governor Sheffield. I have a number of questions. I'm going to start with one, and then maybe we can spread them around. I have had present and former railroad employees come to me and say, you and the legislature, I mean, it's a collective one, are on the right track when you're doing some of these things, asking these questions, and you know, suggesting that maybe that's, you know, the railroad needs to clean up its act. There's some things that have happened or are happening, you know, that where we need some better scrutiny. What do I say to them? I mean, are you aware of some of this? I mean, surely they, maybe they don't feel comfortable in saying it to you, but you must have a suggestion box or some way for employees to voice their concerns like that to where they may be protected, you know, from exposures. What do we say to people like this who obviously know more about it than I do, and maybe even some know more about some of those details than perhaps you're able to even know about?
We have several ways to handle that. That is a concern, and I know that. We have a hotline that we just established about 4 months ago. Didn't realize it wasn't private for a couple of weeks, but it is private. The hotline, any railroad employee can pick it up and talk to me. I mean, tell me what his problems are, and I get back to them. I have an open door policy. They can walk into my office anytime they want to. And they're, most of them know it, but we tell them all the time as I go around. I try to take a day a week and around and talk to the railroad workers. It's the tie gang or the bridge gang and hurricane or in our shops in town or out here in Fairbanks. They can write a personal note. There's an internet system that gets to me and sealed and I answer. Everybody gets answered. We're working with the system, so if they have a suggestion to the supervisor, they make sure that the supervisor gets it to the people that's going to get the answer back to them, or else they answer themselves. There's been a lack of that in the past, but we this year have been better on it and have a better line of communication. I think that communication probably is one of the things that the railroad management has lacked, not just the top management, but down through the system has lacked with employees. And because when you ride a train and talk to the engineer, he's out there every day somewhere on the rail line running the train. He doesn't know what's going on at the home office. And we have a bulletin that comes out every 2 weeks, but we're beginning to put more business things in, more of the meat and potato stuff in it, instead of just what Susie said to Max last week. And so we're doing everything we can to communicate with that employee. And keep in mind, we have 5 unions. Lordy, that's not the easiest thing in the world to work with. We just had new contracts signed last December with the 5 unions. It took about 2 years, much too long to negotiate. And so we always have problems after a new contract is signed and everybody's settling down. But they, generally speaking, I think things are rolling along good in that area.
Have any other questions?
Senator Lehman, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Some confusion as to the status of the Ship Creek Development Project and the Low Payton leasing arrangement. What is the current status of the Ship Creek Development Project, and what are any future plans the railroad might be looking at?
Well, the status is that, as far as the railroad is concerned, Mr. Low Payton has no status as a master leaseholder of the Ship Creek development property, as you're probably referring to, and I am too. But as an attorney probably knows, there's always a lot of gray in some of these contracts, and so he thinks he has some right to develop 4 parcels of land. We say no. We're in the process of negotiating with him a divorce, if you will, between him and the Alaska Railroad, and we're trying to do this amicably. He has control of the government office building that would used to be, whatever that's what the terminal is. That's a separate issue. He has an RV park which is a separate issue, but he has a master lease, which we say has disappeared for lack of development on a timely fashion according to the contract. So we're trying to separate ourselves from him as we speak, have been most of this year, since February, since the contract was up. And I'm hopeful that we'll have it by the end of the year. And when we do that, then we will, in the meantime, we're not just sitting around not thinking about it, but at that point, we'll be able to think a little more on how we can go forward. We want to go forward with development. We have a Ship Creek task force appointed by the mayor, of which we are, of course, a member. And we're working with that task force on thoughts and ideas of what the task force recommendations might be for that area. There will be some suggestions. They'll be out about next February or March. We will, of course, look at that. We will then be able to formulate some plans, a master plan of what that area ought to look like, what it ought to be. We have a person that's on board as the vice president of real estate development that is a planner that does think long range, answers his phone calls every day, gets the work done, and we think that once we get the right to go forward in the Ship Creek, that we'll be able to, with the experience we have under our belt for the last 5 or 6 years, maybe going the wrong direction. There's a lot of reasons for that. Railroad can't all be blamed for it. I won't go into that here, but we're going to try to go forward so we can clean up that area so it'll be a part of downtown Anchorage.
Governor Sheffield, you went through a fairly long litany of examples supporting your contention that if you're under the Executive Budget Act, you wouldn't be able to enter in as easily to these long-term contracts, and suggested that somehow these people who would be contracting with the railroad would not be able to rely on payment or repayment as well as they do now. And yet, I can think of many examples where the state has entered into long-term contracts. We have them right now today. I mean, we sell our royalty oil under long-term contracts. We do a number of things like that, and I'm not aware of any cases where the state is defaulting on paying off its obligations. So I understand the concept of not binding a future legislature, but on the other hand, legislatures have, my time there, have been very firm about honoring the commitments of the state, even if they have been made under past administrations or approved by past legislatures. So I'm just wondering if you have evidence, or if you're thinking of anything in particular that would support your contention, or if you're just using that as an example.
Well, I am concerned about that because, you and I know we can't commit one legislature to the next. You don't know who's going to be there. You don't know how their thinking might change who's there now. You know, if you go line by line on a budget, you don't have the flexibility to operate your business. You know, we're not just in a people business or just making payroll out there for agencies. We are rolling to the needs of the customer, and the needs of the customers can't be predicted always. So. If we get pinned down to a line item budget, we wouldn't have the flexibility to move within that budget system to do the things we have to do. And I can sit here and give you 100 examples, but I don't know if you want to take that kind of time, but and maybe we should sometime. But to me, it would be very cumbersome and wouldn't work.
If I might. So sometime I'd like to follow up on that, maybe see some of those details. Senator Taylor?
I just wanted to follow up on Bill's comments. I think we do have a prime example of just what Sheffield's concerned about, and that is the Four Dam Pool. That's a 50-year power sales contract entered into with the people of basically five different communities. The commitment that the state made in that contract was that they would make certain and maintain that power line, those interties, and the dams. The communities came every year saying we have maintenance requirements. Somebody's got to get out there and fix these lines. The lines got to the place from lack of maintenance and no funding for maintenance. They were literally touching the ground, arcing out. They came to the legislature repeatedly. Legislature turned them down, took their money every year, $11 million worth of income, but never spent it on repairing the lines. Fortunately, within the contract, as it was originally established in 1985, and you know, you were governor at the time, and we were working with these communities to get them on board. It was quite a struggle.
Yeah, we built them and didn't have any power sales.
That's right. And then we, you and I and many others participate right here. I know Jim was very active, involved, and others here in this room were actively involved in negotiating and wrestling out a 50-year power sales agreement. Well, the outcome of that was government running the Four Dam Pool resulted in those communities having to elect on their own to exercise what was called the self-help clause, which meant that they quit sending money to the state. They kept all $11 million. They put that money now into contracts that they have entered into for significant repairs that will probably total well over $20 million in repairs. That money, of course, had been budgeted by the state legislature to go a good portion of it into the Power Cost Equalization Program, which now places that program again in a more difficult position as far as future funding, and they're having to draw from other funds that they had endowed to them, and that of course dramatically impacts how long that endowment will run. I think it's a prime example of why I don't think you in the railroad or the railroad wants the government to be intimately involved in your affairs. But I may be wrong on that analogy, but that's just the first one that came to my mind.
You know, we're looking at potentially a new passenger service from Seward to Anchorage. We're looking to go into the Anchorage Airport with the link rank, looking to go into Girdwood. All those things help our tourist business. We could be partnering with somebody on that line. You'd have to have new equipment, of course. Well, those things are planned in advance of any year's happening, pretty much. There's always things that you don't know. I could just think of lots of examples that, because we're a, I don't know how to explain it, a moving business, you might say, with these private sector people that are moving. I guess we're in the transportation business, and it scares me to think that a future legislature could, without knowing it, inadvertently cause this railroad to affect the economy of Alaska. We're a big part of the economy, not that the railroad's a big, it only hauls about 12% of the freight in Alaska, 14% sometimes. But it's important freight, and we're a big part of the economy from a freight standpoint, for the oil and gas industry, for construction, for gravel, for all the construction jobs in the Anchorage area. And we're hauling gravel night and day now with four trains. And as the economy of Alaska increases, the railroad increases, and we're tied right to it. And to have that disrupted, I think, could be dangerous.
Sir Taylor?
Yeah, I think you've made an eloquent presentation, and so did MAPCO. I'm assuming John will do the same, for how the efficiencies of the operation of this business might be significantly impacted. by the, as colleague Senator Duncan would say, the micromanagement of legislative officious intermeddlers is what I consider us to be. But and I think that point's well made. I think we all understand that. I don't think I've ever heard a better explanation for why the railroad should not be owned by the state of Alaska. It should be operated and owned as other railroads are operated and owned by the shareholders, who should then elect a board of directors. I don't know that any of the current board of directors would be seated there, or yourself as CEO, if it were such. I would think they would bring to the table folks that had lengthy experience and background in running those businesses and had kind of grown up in them and owned major portions of the stock, and that's how they got on the board. I think that's the way other railroads are probably operated. Why should we not, as some have suggested, if this thing isn't marketable, so we can actually put it into the private sector, and then let it run by exactly the same ethical standards and rules and so on that you're attempting to abide by now. Why shouldn't we just do that, or maybe convey, as some have suggested, and you have indicated that they own it, well, let's send a share of stock out to all 600,000 Alaskans, and let's let them see who they're going to vote for and put on the board and see how accountable they want the board to be. And why shouldn't we do that? Because then it would run as it should, a business within the business community, without the constraints and officious intermeddling of the legislature.
That's been discussed, that idea. I went on a tour last winter, a lot of communities in Alaska. That came up a number of times. They said everybody owns a railroad, but somebody else down in the back room said, I'll take my share now. It's like the permanent fund. That has been discussed. There might well be a way to do something like that. When I was governor, we bought this railroad and the legislature, in its wisdom, we struggled a long time. Everybody knew we wanted to buy it, but everybody was trying to figure out how to set it up so it would not be a burden. And what do we know, but would it work somehow? And I always said that, I suppose sometime the railroad would be sold, but it shouldn't be sold until we get our arms around it and know what we got. It shouldn't be sold until we get those transportation corridors established. Alaska, it would be easier for state government, federal government to do that than it would be a private sector. And until that infrastructure is put in place so it could do what it wants to do. And we haven't reached that point yet. We're getting our arms around it. We know what we have. We're operating it better than we used to. I mean, it just takes time in any business. I was in business for 30 years. It got better and worse at times. And you plan. And we're doing long-range planning. We got a roadmap out there. We're like you. We're going to meander through there to get there, but we have a roadmap out there. So no matter who is running the railroad, we have the chance to see where it's going. And so we're not at that stage yet in our life, I don't think, to take the chance of selling to somebody in the private sector that wants to steal it, $10, $15, $20 million. Jesus, we just leased the right of way on a 20-foot right of way pipeline on the railroad to fiber optic. $2 million a year and basic rent, and the rent can go to $6 million when they get into the business. But aside from the money, I'm not so sure that we're ready to give up or lose control of the state, give up or lose control of a transportation corridor that we have between two deep water ports in the interior of Alaska.
How would we, if in fact we conveyed stock? How would we give up control? The people would then own it.
Yeah, I was digressing to the argument last year of privatization, which is a romantic word coming across the country, and But under your idea of giving up, you know, having Alaska owned and the sheriff's dock, you wouldn't, and that would be one advantage of it, because if you went to the true private sector and owned the railroad, you wanted to run a road at Whittier, I'd say if I owned it, sure, maybe a lot of money.
Well, sure.
Or you want to straighten out, you want to straighten out the road burn to gird, I'd say sure, you could play around with my gravel there and stuff, but you got to pay.
Sure.
Now we have a nice arrangement with the state of Alaska or DOT or something, you see, so we don't do that, and they don't. But you have to give a lot of thought before it ever went to the private sector. But on the sheriff's dock for the Alaskans, that's another avenue, mm-hmm. that would present those kind of problems.
I guess my other concern in that regard is, as long as there is an illusion, and I consider it an illusion, as long as there's an illusion of state ownership and state responsibility, if you will, there comes a requirement for some level of oversight, whether it's just meetings with the board every 6 months or 4 months or something by various committees, or whether it's sending a Randy Welker in there to paw around through the books and the decisions that have been made. There's a requirement that somehow we involve ourselves in this process.
Well, the problem is,
I guess that's my concern, we're involved,
elected,
but we're not involved.
Yeah, you know? You're elected too, and you have a need to serve your constituents. And they ask questions, you have to get the answers, and I understand that. If Governor Hill gets mad at us, Senator Lehman's going to want to know what's going on. And Representative Martin brought up that lawsuit. You know, he got it wrong, but it's Paul Lafferty, who lives on Government Hill, nothing to do with the community council, is one who sued the Alaska Railroad over the Flamingo Brothers gravel permit. And Paul's a good friend of mine, and he comes to all of our board meetings, and he knows more what's going on with the railroad than any one of you three, and because he's there all the time, and we're an open door to him. And somehow or other, we'll figure all that out one of these days and take care of it.
It's the illusion, though, is the problem I'm having, is that people perceive that because it is state-owned and it's under the control of the legislature, I mean, we're even having questions asked today about the validity of your ability to contract. If in fact, that's a valid question, I would think that'd have pretty serious ramifications on your ability to do business. And of course, as soon as you award a contract to one guy to buy railroad cars or railroad engines or something else, every competitor out there is all upset because they didn't get it. So then they run around and say, well, it's an inferior product and there's obviously something going on and somebody's a friend of somebody or it wouldn't happen. And
sure.
Then we get these same things are going to continue to come up.
Sure.
In the private sector, that's not going to occur.
Well, just in case you're thinking about it, we bought General Motors locomotives, which is all that we have down the yard now anyway. But GE also gave us a bid, the only other provider, and it was a higher price. So we covered ourselves on that, but we're learning.
No, I just meant that's always going to be out there, no matter what you do, because people think you're state-owned and that it's supposed to be the same type of playing field that they're used to if they're going to make a DOT bid on equipment. And it actually isn't, according to what Randy Welker said. It's a little bit different than that, and your needs are a little bit different than that. That's why I think as long as we continue to maintain this facade, basically, of state ownership and state procurement codes and all the rest of it, and yet the actual workings may not work very well with that system, so when they don't work well with it, we'll just use what we have to do to keep trucks, trains running and oil moving and coal moving and so on. I think that will constantly be a chafing.
I think
will
if
continue.
You had more confidence in the railroad, over the years, a lot of you have been around there a long time in the legislature. You've heard some bad stuff over the years. As you get over it, we get better. You all move on. There'll be new ones. Maybe we'll get over this. But as as I said, they made some mistakes.
Bound to.
Attitude, probably more than anything else. And I just here to tell you that we're not doing that anymore. Right? You know what? When you talk about, the FRA, the Federal Railway Administration, is helping to make a model railroad out of us. And information services, we're going to have a global positioning system, GPS on all of our locomotives. We're going through a complete change of dispatching, computerized dispatching, and we've just updated the state's microwave relay system, which the railroad uses, and with new radios and new microwave relay towers and across the state. And we're going into GPS and collision avoidance system. It would be like an airline. If you're not making your train fast enough, the speed up, you're going too fast, we'll move you back so that you can control where you are and where the other guy is, so you walk beside him at the right time. We never had a collision in Alaska Railroad in its history, except in 1974, one train drove into the back end of another one, but that's not as bad as hitting head on. But we don't want to, because more people are killed by collisions than they are by derailments. So they're helping to make a model railroad out of us with all this information service. So the tune is about $10 to $12 million. We're about 4 minutes into it. If there's a slide on the way to Seward, we'll know before we leave the gate. Now we know it as you go around the corner, you look at it, you know. And the reason they're doing it is that they're trying to force Class 1 railroads across the country to do the same thing. And they can afford to do it, but they don't want to do it. They're railroaders, you know, they're tough people. You know? So they're going to make us a model railroad out of this thing, and then they'll bring them to us and let them look at what we've done, because it's a smaller railroad, you can see it. Anyway, just a little point I thought you ought to know that.
Thank you for joining us today. We have 4 more people, I believe, who have signed up, and I hate to cut off these questions, but...
This is a Representative Calvary in Anchorage. I would like to ask the governor, if that's possible, a couple of short questions.
John, if they're short, and the last question you had was not short.
Okay.
But if you can keep it very short, and Governor, if you can keep your answer short, we will we'll take it. But we do have an 11 o'clock deadline here that we're working within, and we have 4 people who have been patiently waiting, and I do want to get to them.
Okay, yeah. Am I correct, Governor, that the under the federal ownership of the railroad, it had General Accounting Office oversight on their funding and things like that?
Representative Conrad, I think that's right, because I think that would be the normal procedure. I think it was out of Washington, D.C., but I can, if you want a further answer to that, I can let you know that in about an hour and a half when I call Jim Blassingame, who's Vice President of Corporate Affairs, been there 100 years, so he'll know.
Yeah, he's here. Yeah, that's true. He's nodding his head.
Okay.
And so
sorry, Jim, it's only 25 years.
My point is that, you know, we've had this before and it didn't seem to be harm. But anyway, I know that we're short of time, so I will pass on, and hopefully, Governor, when you're in Anchorage, we can get together and talk, or when you come to Juneau or something, I'd like to do some one-on-one.
Well, let's do it in Anchorage. That's more neutral ground.
Okay. Thank you.
Lauren, I've got a quick follow-up.
Okay, Tim.
I'm assuming Randy Welker is still online. Governor Sheffield has indicated the railroad's total spending will approach $100 million in 1999. If we add that amount to the fiscal year 2000 state budget, what percentage increase will that be perceived as?
5%. Mr. Chairman,
5%.
I don't have that percentage nor calculator in front of me, but I guess it would be a policy call of how that's added into the spending plan. If it's recognized, number one, it's not GF expenditure, but also if it's recognized that it's already an existing cost of state government, one could argue that it isn't an increment at all.
Well, what if one wanted to argue that it was? How much of an increment would that?
It'd be a little over 4% of the general fund, Tim.
4.5%.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
We wouldn't want to be blamed for wrecking your budget. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Jeanette James. And standing by in the wings, Kevin Bergsrud. And John, you want to testify?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to just take a few minutes, and I will prepare some written testimony to submit to the committee after this, so I won't take so much time. I think it's important. This is Jeanette James. I'm a representative of District 34. And I think it's important that I bring a few things to mind at this point in time, and that is that Yucca Valley Coal Mine is in my district. MAPCO Petroleum is in my district. Eielson Air Force Base is in my district. And so I have most of the customers on the Alaska Railroad. I also have a large share of the employees of Alaska Railroad living in my district. So I naturally have a real big concern. But even beyond that, I've always been a supporter of rail transportation because it is one of the most environmentally sound ways and safest ways to move people and materials. So I have a spot in my heart for railroads. Anyway, I got introduced to the Alaska Railroad, actually, in 1993, my first year as a freshman legislator, and it was not a friendly meeting. I was distressed, and having a background in accounting and in business consulting, I know what makes a business work and what doesn't, and I can tell you what doesn't make it work, and that's government. In fact, this government ought not to be running businesses, and that's why we're pushing for much privatization. But my first incursion with them was over the Comfort Inn in Anchorage. And I argued vehemently with the railroad on that issue because what they had done is they had taken a 40% interest in the Comfort Inn because that was more money to them than the lease payment would be. And they felt a fiduciary responsibility to get the most money out of the deal. But in the net result of that, taking a 40% interest in it, allowed the Comfort Inn to be built by an outside person with nothing down, because they're only a 60% owner, and the financing was done based on the strength of the 40% ownership by the railroad. So I was really upset about that, and quite frankly, I filed in 1993 a piece of legislation which would put the railroad under the Executive Budget Act and under the Administrative Procedures Act. I meant business. We don't do business this way because of unfair competition with the private sector. And they didn't understand why it was, and I said it was because somebody out there in the private sector got a really specially good deal because of the deal you made. And as a result of my aggravation over this issue, and probably a lot of others as well, the regulations were changed for the railroad, and they will not do that again, and they haven't done that since. So I believe that my insistence and after participating with the railroad, I made some changes, and I think they're available today. That same year was a big year for the railroad, because that same year is when we had the problem of breakdown of NAPCO, and they were going to put on trucks, and they were into the purchase of trucks and so forth. Also in my district is Glitter Gulch going through Denali Park. That is a traffic disaster, where we have a through traffic of trucks, of all of your tourist vehicles and so forth, and a pedestrian traffic across that street. And I've also been heavy on DOT, saying at least get on the drawing board a method to get around that. Go another route on that park's highway. And I think I finally this year got some attention to do a little drawing, to make some plans for that, because there's no way that you can extend any size or make any kind of real safety improvements in that area. And I certainly didn't want all those trucks. It takes three trucks for every car to haul oil. I didn't want that happening in my district. And so I kept constant vigil between MAPCO, which was Bucky Wright at the time, and Bob Hatfield with the